And this hour, Conversations with Richard C. Hoagland, head of the EnterpriseMission.com. And we'll be back with your phone calls and Richard in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, we're with Richard C. Hoagland, Conversations with Richard this hour. And Richard, this is truly, though, we haven't talked a lot about the Gagarin and the importance of all of this. 50 years ago, it seems, now that seems so long ago, but in the scheme of things, that's nothing.
But in the scheme of things, it was supposed to be everything. I mean, if you remember, as I started my speech in Amsterdam, what 2001 was supposed to represent, a la Arthur C. Clarke and Stanley Kubrick in that incredible film. We were supposed to have tourist travel to and from low Earth orbit and bases and hotels on the moon and on Mars with transits in a spacecraft, which is in the film called Ares, which means Mars. So we're so far below where we should have been over a decade ago. And that makes everyone, which is part of what we were discussing in Amsterdam, ask the question, is the space programs that we see merely a false front Western town? And the real space programs are light years even beyond Arthur and Stanley's projections. But we're never supposed to know. And until we break this incredible, you know, to quote Jim Mars, rule by secrecy, there's no way we're ever going to know or break out of prison. That's why I'm so intrigued with Alex Jones and his choosing of that term for his website, Prison Planet, because that's what we're in, George. We're in prison.
Yeah, we are.
We need a breakout. And space is it.
So, but we're going to end up being a robotic nation. We're going to send little probes here, little probes there. I don't see us sending a man anywhere.
Unless there is a breakthrough. And that's why connecting with Jesse last night and this physics, which, of course, is the physics of how you travel in space for real and go to the stars and do all the other things we see in Star Trek that people dismiss as fiction. And, in fact, Gene was telling us the truth in that series.
Indeed, he has. Let's take some calls. You ready?
Yep.
Let's go to Houston, Texas. First-time caller, Bob, you're with us, and you're on with Richard Hoagland. Hey, Bob, go ahead.
Hey, it's great to be on. Sorry to say Richard's under the weather tonight. I hope it gets better.
He's fighting.
I wanted to ask y'all if y'all were both aware of, particularly when Lindsey Williams was on about a month and a half ago, he was saying about 2 weeks before the thing happened in Japan on the 11th, he was saying that the elites were ready to pull off another 9/11. Do you think this is what Lindsey Williams is possibly warning us of, and are y'all aware that he said that on one of the shows?
Yeah, oh no, I know he said that, but I'm not so sure this was the event. Richard, even though you think this earthquake may have been caused by some manipulation of man.
Well, we have what we call the signatures. Remember, these guys, I call them the ritualists. They can't go down the hall to the John without doing it under an appropriate celestial sign. So once you crack, you can't, thank you, George. Once you crack that code, it's like reading the Japanese code in World War II. We cracked the code, and we obviously didn't let them know, and that's how we were able to vector, for instance, fighters to knock off a key Japanese general when he was flying in the, somewhere around Indonesia in those islands, because we knew what the Japanese were saying among themselves. Well, this is the equivalent. We've cracked the code of the ritualists, the elite, whatever you want to call it. The Illuminati, you know, all these things are the same thing. And when you know their ritual code and the fact that for them they cannot break the code. In other words, if they say they're going to do a certain thing, it's because to them it's everything and it has to go forward in one way or another with key symbolism. So once you crack the code and you know what's going on, predicting the future is a little easier. It's not a lead pipe cinch because, you know, you also have a lot of players who were not in on the ritual. And if they have power, because some people have power who are not the insiders, it makes for a very complex, you know, sociological system, political system. And this is all, you know, it goes back, it harkens back to what we all tried to do in the 50s in terms of reading the Kremlin tea leaves, trying to figure out what the Soviet Union was going to do based on, you know, who was standing on Lenin's tomb every May Day and stuff like that.
What do you think of Ed Grimsley's theory of a space war going up there? Primarily, he thinks it's between extraterrestrial races. I'm not so sure, but what do you think of this theory?
I've actually seen, I mean, when we use the glasses on the cruise on the Norwegian Star,
right?
I saw things with the glasses that should not be up there. I mean, I know a satellite, I know stars, I know planets, you know, I do know the sky, it's my backyard. And I saw things, and I told everybody, and they, of course, looked, and they saw the same thing, which instantly said there's something really wondrously weird going on, and Ed is totally right. Now, did we see battles? No. But I think we've got NASA video downlinked from shuttle cameras from decades ago, STS-48 and STS-80,
mm-hmm.
which show us those battles in orbit as filmed by NASA's own cameras before the censorship lid slammed down and they started delaying their broadcast by a minute or so they can, you know, hit the kill switch.
Like, one of them shows like a missile launch against some kind of craft,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. On the distant horizon. And these craft just step nimbly aside, and the shot goes right by.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, to me, it was like a demo. And it was meant to leak out and meant to be taken seriously because it isn't a monolithic system. There are cracks in the system. There are folks inside who are part of the system keeping us in the dark who are desperately trying to get us information so we can break out into the light. And, in terms of real aliens, when I was in Amsterdam, one of the things I showed was a slide where I have aligned about six groups that I've identified now as part of this space war reality that's going on, unbeknownst to any of us down here. And of those six groups, two are extraterrestrial, meaning they're human, but they live off planet. They're our cousins. Because we're much older and more extraordinary than anyone has dared to dream for a very long time. The human race is really old and really used to do amazing things. And then you've got genuine aliens who are, you know, species that don't have our DNA, that are not related to us, who are here to observe, to basically see how it comes out. Are we going to break out of prison? It's like the best game in town. You know, they may even be taking bets. The point is that there is a lot of complexity in terms of identifying who's flying what, and you can't see the insignias, and you have to figure it out by back engineering the politics and the science down here on Earth. And that's why I was so really blown away to see how incredibly convergent Dr. Wood's work now on the 9/11 problem and our work on the secret space war has come together. And I believe, and Joseph Farrell is with me on this because we've had extensive discussions, that what we saw on September 9th, 2001, was a shot across the bow by someone taking on the elites, the banksters, the people who run the planet, the city of London, if you will, and notifying them that the status quo was over. Now, we have some suspicions as to who this unseen party might be, and the independent breakaway civilization a la the Nazi developments after World War II that Lavenda and I and Joseph and Dolan are talking about seems the most likely contender. But we don't really know. I mean, I was in a conference in Los Angeles, you know, the last year or so, and an Australian intelligence agent comes up to me and gets all buddy-buddy and starts talking about, you know, Nexus and have you ever been to Australia and stuff like that. And we sit down in the bar and we're having a drink and he says, you know, somebody showed up that we don't like, meaning some race, some other extraterrestrial civilization has shown up that we, meaning the guys that run the planet now, the elites, don't like. Well, that, depending upon how narrowly you parse your words, that can mean a couple of interesting things, meaning the breakaway civilization, humans, Nazis, who used to live here and then now have colonies out in the solar system because they can, and it's a incredible security barrier to anybody finding out what's going on. They've shown up, meaning they've come back. Or we're dealing with real extraterrestrial unknowns who have shown up that we, meaning the power structure, doesn't like, because one of my groups in my list are the relations, the cousins, who really want us to break free of what's currently going on. And we're part of the original civilization that had the Great War that Joseph and I and Tom Van Flandern discussed at length. In other words, we're getting, George, to the point where we can now assemble these dots or the pieces of this puzzle, just like one of those old-fashioned puzzles you used to gather around you know, the kitchen table and dump the puzzle on a Saturday night, and all the kids and mom and dad would try to fit the puzzle together and make the picture recognizable. We're at the point where now we can begin to put the key pieces in the key places on the board and see what this monster really is.
Good point. Next up, South Carolina. Barry, you're with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Barry.
Hi, George and Richard.
Richard,
I just want to say right up front, black walnut cancer kills all them little bugs in you. I had some insight into the World Trade Center.
Mm-hmm.
In that I was working for a lab at that time. And I keep hearing people say stuff about there had to be high temperature fireworks go off in there because of the metal that they found couldn't have melted. Anyhow, to make a long story short, that the design of that building was unique in that they were going to only use center columns. The concrete that was poured was called solite. And the reason it was called solite is in the smelting process of steel, the scrapings that come off the top form bubbles. They take that, they mix it in lieu of rock because of its light weight. I made cylinders to do 3, 6, 30-day, 60-day, and unbeknownst to anybody else, a year. And I busted my oldest cylinders, and they sheared and did right, and they got up to 5,000 PSI just like they were supposed to. Well, a year later, when I broke the one, it didn't shear like concrete does. It exploded. I spent 30 minutes cleaning up the damn machine. Okay, now, Donald Trump, a year before this happened, and it was in all the tech magazines, said, tried to buy the thing, but he said the floors were cracked so bad it would cost him more than the building cost him.
Mm.
Well, the Saudis had bought it, and then they gave the New York Ports Authority a fire sale deal on it.
Right.
And they bought it back, and they didn't know what to do with it because I kept on following it because I watched the design work, and I'm going, Jesus Christ, you're going to put this solid support in the middle, and you're going to hang the outside wall off of that damn concrete. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so
are you, in essence, saying that in a conventional interpretation, if this building really collapsed instead of having anything else happen to it, it would have collapsed in a unique way because of the very materials which were created to form it, that when they were subjected to overpressures, they exploded as opposed to collapsing?
Yeah. But, okay.
But how does that explain the steel columns turning into dust? And Judy has video, obviously recorded from one of the networks or one of the stations that was shooting that day in New York, showing in a time-lapse sequence these center steel columns, after the floors have all gone away and they're just standing there naked to the sky, these three stabbing steel columns with the support structure around the center ones, they literally wispily turn to dust and blow away in the wind.
And look how quickly they took away the crime scene.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was no stuff to take away because 90% of the building was, as Judy says, dustified. When you go through with her step by step what happened and the fact that there's no known science that can explain it, not even this weird concrete that when you break it, it explodes or it ejects shrapnel as opposed to just snapping. Because the steel turned into nano dust. And that can't happen in any physics that we think we know. But it's exactly what this secret black ops physics that both the Russians and our side have been playing with for decades can do. And that's where her work and our work came together. And if the governor, is the guy I think he is. He is going to be absolutely on the warpath to get this story wide and out there so people can see how they've been lied to and how we need to take back control of this secret technology before someone does something really stupid.
If they let him do it, Richard.
Well, but then we'll know by the barriers he encounters.
Good point. In other words,
yep. he's not a Sunday soldier. Once he understands that this is the war, his training will come into view in my model, and Jesse will be the guy we all need, which is the guy to lead the charge to change the future and history.
Let's see if we can get in one more call before the break. Mike is in San Diego. Go ahead, Mike. You're on with Richard.
Hi. First of all, hi, George. Hi, Richard.
Hi.
Nice to be on the show. First of all, in response to your previous caller about the that whole thing, interestingly enough, I saw a documentary on the anniversary of 9/11 this last fall, and I saw a firefighter stand there, and this was video with audio that was real, and I'm pretty good at telling that because I'm into voiceovers.
Right.
So I heard this firefighter say, in a kind of a narrating way, questioning it, when it was falling, he said, bang, 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 bang. He was repeating what he was hearing. And so I thought that was interesting, the concept of whether it was an explosion or not. I just thought I would throw that out there. Because I really, when I saw that, I really thought that to be real, what he was experiencing. The other thing that I wanted to ask you, Richard, was the origin of aliens. I'm having a little trouble filtering through my paradigm of good and evil, which I believe in a very real sense, although my spiritual views are very flexible and an understanding of a loving God. When I think of aliens and everything, I don't see or can't think of any times of benevolence toward us, and that's troubling to me, and therefore, in my thinking, I'm leaning toward aliens are from an evil derivative, or they were created by an evil, whatever, the six people, the elite, or whatever, the devil or Beelzebub. You know what I'm saying?
There are so many possible scenarios, you'll never figure it out. We need more data, and we know where to go and get it. This is why, to me now, the most crucial objective is to get off this planet, to get a space program going that gets us back to the moon. There is stunning archival stuff on the moon, cities, libraries, records, machines, technology. That's what, John Leary and I have this constant, fight going on, very good natured. He says they're mining the moon. I say, no, John, they're mining the technology on the moon. Who needs moon dirt when you have hyperdimensional physics and can make anything?
Richard, we're going to come right back and we'll take final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, before we leave you, we've got a final half hour of phone calls to go with Richard C. Hoagland. So stand by for that. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast, Richard C. Hoagland, your phone calls here. Richard, any more return trips to Homestead, the Coral Castle?
Well, probably. Actually, I'm trying to organize an expedition to Egypt. We've done our test.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. We've done, Coral Castle is like New Haven. It used to be when you produced a Broadway show, you'd try it out of town in New Haven. There's a great story about Betty Davis and one of her plays in New Haven. Well, Coral Castle was New Haven for us and the hyperdimensional torsion model physics, the field testing we did with the Accutron detector. Now I want to go to Egypt and measure the pyramid, and I know how to do it. In fact, we had someone on the cruise who was actually discussing seriously with us how to do it, in terms of funding, et cetera, et cetera. So it's going to happen, and it was going to involve some other folks that and we'll make a big deal of it, and we'll report live from the pyramid, and it's going to be within the next 6 months. I'd like to do it by the end of this year.
Is this our last chance
to test the physics of the same geometrical astronomical alignment configuration before the big D, 2012.
Is it safe to go there right now?
Why not? Oh, you mean the revolution?
Yeah.
George, if you hide under your bed about everybody that says something bad about you or a place where there's stuff going on, you'll never do anything. If you really believe, as I do, in the hyperdimensional model of higher consciousness, what's going on in Egypt is people are becoming of higher consciousness. And just like Art organized a whole bunch of people to protect me through the radio, through the medium, that night when I had my awful heart attack where the doctor said to Robin, he's going to die. And I didn't because of all of you. That's the most extraordinary in my life demonstration that this physics is real and it can move mountains. In this case, it healed a heart. You know, I'm better now than I was then.
Yeah,
you I was jumping up and down pyramids on global television, on NBC.
I still don't know how you did that. Amazing.
Well, it was cool. It was fun. And the cruise we just did was kind of like a prototyping of how we would do a cruise down the Nile, using that as kind of our starship, our headquarters, and then do these away team explorations of the really cool architecture all along the Nile, relating it to what's on Mars and this stunning deep correlation that we can now prove with the help of some of our friends like Graham Hancock and Robert Bavall and John Anthony West. I mean, this is going to be a really exciting time to put the dots together.
All right. Well, let's go to Dayton, Ohio. Marlene, we've got you here on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Marlene.
Okay, great. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is to Richard concerning the space shuttles that were announced today. Dayton, Ohio is in the Midwest, 60% away from most of the population in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And the birthplace of aviation, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and the thing is the Air Force Museum, which is free for everyone to enter. If the space, we were on the list. If the space shuttle had been sent here, anyone could enter and see the space shuttle for absolutely free. And I've heard in one of the cities, it's going to go from anywhere from $16 to enter per person up to $60 per person and over.
Wow, that's a lot. So what happened? Any decision yet out there?
It was decided today. The one was in Washington. The other, let me think a minute. The other was in Florida.
So you're not Dayton. Wright-Patterson's not going to get any.
Well, that's correct. And we have the Air Force Museum, Birthplace of Aviation. Anyone entering the Air Force Museum could have seen the space shuttle for absolutely free, where people are not going to have to pay anywhere from $16 through $60 per person, and possibly more than that per person to see the space shuttle.
Well, it looks like they're trying to recoup their money, huh, Richard? I don't know if there's... Richard, are you there? Well,
hello?
Richard. Yeah, there you are.
Oh, sorry.
There you are. You're back.
This is all symbolic. This is not normal politics. That's why it looks so peculiar. I will tell you a piece of good news. You're going to get a space shuttle. They're going to rotate these things around through all these museums, so that everybody in the United States can have a piece of the action. They're starting with the current template, which is New York, she said Washington, the Cape, mm-hmm. and California, because of political and economic reasons overlaid with this symbology. I mean, I thought it was just amazing today. The Enterprise, which is the first shuttle, which I, together with a whole bunch of Star Trek fans back in the 1970s, together with Carol Rosen, who was the executive administrator under Wernher von Braun.
That's right.
And B. Joe Trimble, who was head of the Star Trek contingent out in California. And, you know, my friend Gene Roddenberry. We put together a campaign that, according to the Washington Post, resulted in a couple of months from the time we started it to the time that President Ford successfully acceded to our wishes. The Post says the White House got 400,000 letters, George. This is before Facebook, before Coast, before any kind of communication,
yeah,
from avid Star Trekkies who wanted their shuttle named the Enterprise as a symbol of their conquest of space, the democratization of space. Today, on the 50th anniversary of the beginning of the space age, NASA announces that the Enterprise, the shuttle that they decided would never fly in space because they were so mad at the constituency which overruled their own wishes with the president because they wanted to call it Constitution, they announced today that this first spaceship, which was tested in those airdrop landings in California at Edwards Air Force Base, is going to go to the Imperial Aircraft Carrier Museum on the west side of New York City, of Manhattan. And I've been, thinking all day, okay, what's the symbolic connection between the Enterprise winding up with the Intrepid? Because Gene did not pick the Enterprise out of thin air. There's a deep historical legacy connected to that name, that ship, and what she represents. And that's why the president was able to, with total conscience, not accede to the wishes of a bunch of science fiction fans, but to the history embodied in that name as the proper emblem for the first true spaceship that modern society had ever created, the space shuttle system. So today they announce, on the anniversary, not only of Gagarin's flight, 50 years ago, but the first shuttle mission in 1981, the Columbia, was on this date. So this represented an opening, another opening, and what is coming next. Something today was inaugurated big time on the eve of the President of the United States address tonight to the nation. And I think it's actually 1 o'clock this afternoon, which is incredibly symbolic. And I think, based on all we know, connecting all these dots, Barack Obama is going to have something very interesting and important to say that will connect a lot of this for the American people.
We shall see, Richard. We shall see. Hollywood, California. Kenny, you're up with us. Hi, Kenny.
Hi.
Good. Hi. Good to have you with us.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes. I heard this comment about the Mayan calendar a lot of people don't realize that the reason why the Mayan calendar ended in 2012 is because Cortez, on behalf of the Roman Catholic Church and the Queen of Spain, decimated, killed all the Incas, the Aztecs, and the Mayans. And that was the end of that. They started building, setting crosses and building stupid churches, and they killed off these wonderful civilizations. Okay, we would have known a lot more about the Mayan calendar, and there would have been many more calendars. Okay, but this is what the putrid ideology of the Roman Catholic Church has done around the world, and the agenda, okay, of the conquering the planet through the ideology of Jesus Christ is what's going on. This is where the elite is, okay? That's when you see that movie, Angels and Demons, that's what's going on. So I totally think that this is the evil in this world is the institution by the Roman Catholic Church that is bent on making everybody on this planet slave into this ideology, this mythology, which none of it is real, okay?
And well, let's see. There'd be a lot of Roman Catholics that would say, what are you talking about? You're nuts. Jerry, what do you think, Richard?
Well, a lot of what he's saying historically is true. I might quibble as to him identifying, the church as the only, bad guys in this picture.
Right.
But what's interesting, the thing that he just said, which is not true, is that the Spanish did not kill off the Mayans. The Mayans are with us right now in a totally flourishing underground, philosophy, religion, view of the world. And it's those Mayan elders who blessed, for some extraordinary reason, the President of the United States just the other day in his decisions, in his plans, in his work. And I'm saying we need to pay attention very closely to why that has happened. And I think tomorrow night is going to give us some major clues.
Well, it better.
Tonight. I keep thinking it's yesterday.
Well, yeah, we're now Wednesday. Here we are. Let's go to Detroit, Michigan. Alyssa, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
I sure can.
Okay, great. I just wanted to share with you my four reasons that I'm very glad to hear that Coast is making inroads in greater market, penetration over there in Europe and anywhere else in the world for that matter. So I'll share them with you.
Sure.
For number four would be because the range of alternative subject matter that you guys cover, from paranormal to the undays to conspiracy theories, if anybody gets too worried about one particular subject, they can always tune into Coast and catch a different thing to worry about. It's a good distraction. And number three would be the subjects are very interesting and you back them up with facts. And that gives people a little mental exercise to expand their thinking. And number two, the truth needs some loose soil to sprout through. But the most important reason, I think, for Coast to reach as far as they can throughout the world is the example that you set, George, to all people about how to treat others kindly and with respect and consideration. It never fails. I'll be on the other side of the radio reacting to somebody with a, oh my gosh, are you nuts? You know, and you, on the other hand, are treating people with a consideration that sets an example to everybody. And so I want to say thank you. You're awesome. Yep. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Back in my old hometown of Detroit, as a matter of fact. Well, we want to take it international, Richard. I want it to continue growing. That's part of my plan.
You know, one of our Facebook listeners just submitted a very intriguing idea. Georgie Brent said, why didn't you call it pole to pole?
Pole to pole.
Which has a tremendous hyperdimensional twist to it.
Yeah, it sure does. It sure does. Cimarron, Fremont, Nebraska. You're on with Richard Hoagland. Hey, Cimarron.
Hey, how you doing? Can you hear me?
Good. Sure thing.
Okay. Yeah, just a couple things. One, I had a comment about your last guest and my encounter. One thing I think about it might be that, he was talking a lot about how, you know, a lot of people wonder how they have the insight without the astrological insight that we have today. But, maybe they didn't have some insight from other beings, and maybe that's when they're going to come back.
Well, let me pick up on that, George.
Okay.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, Farrell and I and some others are looking at this Mayan thing, and we're saying, okay, kind of like what John West said about Egypt, it isn't an evolution, it's a legacy, meaning someone gave them, the Mayans we know and love, this information thousands of years ago, and their mandate was to preserve it for when it would be used, which is now.
Which is now. That's absolutely right. About four more minutes to go, Rich. We're going to let you go and let you rest that voice and take care of that cold, huh?
Well, it's a different way to do the show.
By the way, with Robin was in Amsterdam with you. How did they react to alternative medicine out there?
Oh, there's a tremendous, Europe is light years ahead of us. She was nonstop conversations. They interviewed her on radio and television. We actually met some friends who were doing naturopathic and holistic healing in a bookstore and in an apothecary. They actually have apothecaries still over there. And, I mean, every conversation that needs to be advanced, you can do it in Europe a lot easier than you can here, except on Coast to Coast.
It's true. Well, you've got a gem there. She's a very caring person, Richard.
My best kept secret.
Let's go to Paul, Denver, Colorado. Paul, you're on with us. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Paul.
Compliments to both of you on your life's work. You've been talking about Dr. Wood's work. I wonder if you're familiar with Dr. Stephen Jones's work on 9/11. I say that because... October of 2006, about 5 years ago, I attended a four-hour presentation at the University of Colorado in the main lecture hall of the mathematics building, in which Dr. Jones and his colleague, Ryan Woods, presented exactly the same case.
Sure. They've both been on the show. They've both been on. Steve Jones has been on, as has Ryan Woods.
Okay.
And, they're good, dedicated researchers as well.
Well, my answer is very simple. You have to go by the empirical evidence. And when you tally, the columns, which model satisfies more of the criteria, the weirdness. I mean, 9/11 was absolutely weird. And that's, I think, what's driven a lot of mainstream investigators who would have looked at the normal anomalies and kind of said, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. basically away from the case, because the deeper they get into it, the weirder it gets, and they have no model to account for the weirdness, which is a totally exotic, unknown technology was used to turn those buildings into dust, to disintegrate them, like the old 1950s sci-fi flicks. It was some kind of massive disintegrator beam based on torsion field physics, which John Hutchison has played with empirically with his experiments in crossing RF fields and electrostatic fields and all that. And the interference pattern of the ray, the beam, the whatever, you know, torsion beam was used, literally ricocheted around lower Manhattan, amplified by materials in the walls of those skyscrapers, to where you had almost a chain reaction of hyperdimensional energy released like a mini nuclear weapon, except it wasn't nuclear.
Well, it sounds like Tesla technology.
It's absolutely Tesla. Remember when Tesla bragged in the 20s, and of course at that time nobody was listening? He was basically, you know, condemned to only talk to the New York Times and the New York Post and reporters who would sit around having drinks and listen to the old man, you know, spin these tall tales. He talked about, with his physics, his technology, a disintegrator beam, which could basically put shields over American cities and keep aircraft and any invaders at bay. That's the technology that Judy Wood has verified.
Well, as I said, Richard, we're going to get her on the show. Thank you. Take care of that cold. Well, yeah, I want to hear the old Richard Hoagland's voice back again. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasour, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy and Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.